welcome to the Liminalist, the podcast between. This is Jason Halsey in England, UK. My flight was not delayed. I was not allowed on it, so I'm spending some extra days in England sorting that out. This is a conversation I had with my niece, Emerald Gould. It was on the 21st of August while the big solar eclipse was going on. It was obviously invisible for us. It was in the evening time. The audio is a little hard on this to hear. The voice is a little hard to hear. It's a very intimate conversation, and I request that people just stick with it. Don't worry if you can't hear some of what we're saying. Just tune into the atmosphere of the conversation, and I'm sure it will carry you through. Both of us speak very quietly, so
yeah.
That's one way that we might have to perform a little bit.
So what are we talking about?
Be out of character. Well, there's two subjects that I have in mind. One is that.
Yeah.
Because we talking about this, and the other is what we touched on yesterday in the restaurant, which was... That's funny, I just saw Clockwork Orange.
Oh, really?
As soon as I was about to say that, we started with Clockwork Orange and... And then went into the question of what a psychopath is or isn't. So, which of those subjects seems more inviting?
So we're doing one?
No, we do both, but where to start is always the question. Oh, I thought there's an intersection between the two subjects, which is Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
Is Travis Bickle a psychopath?
No.
Because you like him.
Yeah.
But I think that many people would say that he was, or at least that he had a psychotic episode. I mean, I would say that was a psychotic episode he had.
Well, yeah, but what we were arguing about, where we started.
Yeah, for
I see.
Doesn't mean it'll make the podcast. But
right, no, I was confused because I thought we were talking about what we were going to talk about before we started.
Yeah, well, we are, but I might as well start recording.
Well, what's difficult is, because what I think of as a psychopath is obviously different to what we were talking about last night.
On that, so.
So, obviously, in that definition I have of a psychopath, that wouldn't be psychopathic. Because
he has feelings.
Yeah, because it's clearly an act of feeling, rather than...
What feeling is it that he's acting out of?
Rage.
Okay. But he doesn't express anger until he explodes.
Yeah.
Actually, I hadn't thought about that, but actually, I don't think Travis Bickle gets angry in the whole movie, does he? Oh, yeah, he does with Betsy.
Yeah.
You're one of them. You're in hell, are you?
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, so you have an interior definition of a psychopath as opposed to an exterior one. In other words, it's not what a person does, but what's going on internally that makes them a psychopath.
Yeah. So, my question is... Is a psychopath someone... I don't know what I'm saying. I find it difficult to speak because I obviously talked about this last night.
Yeah, well, just don't pretend that you didn't.
Also because I feel like I don't know what I'm trying to say.
If someone, I mean, what would you describe Travis as? I mean, okay, he's a lonely person and so on and so forth, but, I mean, what if I went crazy and shot a bunch of people for no apparent reason? I mean, how would you describe that? How would you interpret that?
Well, not as you being a psychopath. Because we know you're not a psychopath.
Well, We do we? I mean, you feel you do because you know me well enough, but of course it's a bit of a cliche that, oh, such a nice boy. That's the
Yeah,
cliche that people don't suspect.
but some people are stupid though,
Well, they
because
are.
a lot of psychopaths are able to fool people by acting and by pretending to feel things. But if you have a bit of a brain on you, genuinely, I mean, you should be able to tell if you have an actual connection with someone rather than someone's pretending to have a connection with
Well, I
you.
think you're assuming there that you know what psychopaths are capable of in terms of acting and
Yeah,
so
but
on.
I
Like
think.
the actors that you admire. Actually, this has come up in the past about Hollywood and the possibility that famous people are psychopaths. And we always assume, well, no, they couldn't be because they're so nice. Oh, they seem so nice,
Yeah, but
but.
there's a difference between seeming nice and feeling a connection with someone.
Yeah, well, you said brain, so but what you're talking about there is a sort of intuitive, felt, sensed connection with somebody, which you're assuming, suggesting that you at least couldn't be fooled, which is not really testable. It may or may not be true, but the assumption is that, okay, some people can be fooled and some people can't, but you don't know how. How effective a psychopath might be, this hypothetical psychopath,
Yeah.
in terms of simulating a connection with people.
But they can still be really successful in a broader sense. Like, you can fool anybody if you're in a group and if you're not having a one-on-one connection with someone, but.
But the thing is, I mean, this is, I don't know if this is addressing what you're saying, probably isn't, but. That's what thought I'm having, which is that because I have had psychotic episodes, I have done things that I considered psychotic. They're just the repercussions or the consequences weren't as severe as Travis's case. Of course, he became a hero. The irony of that, but people were killed and stuff. So I haven't killed anyone, but I've definitely had something I consider a psychotic episode. So the other thing here is that. It's not necessary. I mean, this is departing from your definition of psychopath because we haven't verified that these people exist that have no feelings and just sort of go around like these cold predators. But at least the kind that Travis resembles and that I have direct experience in myself is that it's not that they're pretending to be nice, gentle people while all the while they're, getting ready to do some horrific act of violence. It's that they snap. And we can see it in Taxi Driver that he's building up, like he's like a pot slowly coming to the boil. So that's one idea of a psychopath. Or, I mean, there's one obvious dichotomy is somebody who is a psychopath and somebody who simply has a psychotic episode. So therefore they act psychopathically. That would mean that they would have a pathology, but that it was kind of dormant, and then at a certain point it becomes active.
I think what I find difficult is if there isn't like a proper concrete definition, then I don't really understand how anyone's a psychopath and how everyone isn't just people that have psychotic episodes. So if there isn't a definition of psychopath, which is someone who actually doesn't have feelings,
Or something else. I mean, it could be any
yeah,
definition as
but
long as it's clear.
as long as it's clear, but then if it isn't clear, so if it's just someone whose feelings are really suppressed or someone who has a lot of rage, like an insane amount of rage, then that to me would say that there isn't really such a thing. It's just everyone's just a spectrum.
Well, I think you asked the difference between sociopath and psychopath last night. So I think your definition of psychopath is closer to the definition of a sociopath.
Which is what? No feelings, but
It
functioning.
isn't as straightforward as no feelings, but it's somebody who, who lacks effective empathy or compassion, who is predatorial, who is very controlling. Manipulative, driven, who exploits and manipulates others for personal gain, and yeah, who has no feelings. I mean, at least,
again,
well,
I just don't understand
rage.
How someone who has no feelings would have the drive to do that. It's why I don't...
Well, yeah, but, I mean, but the whole thing, feelings, is a bit, for you, there's a thing about feelings, and as in you have a difficult time defining them and so on and so forth. So that, it's like one question then leads into another question. I can't imagine any definition, intelligent definition of a psychopath or a sociopath saying somebody who has no feelings. That's just too vague. And yet everybody has some sort of feelings.
Okay.
And you're right, yeah, if somebody had no feelings, what would be motivating them?
Well, exactly, well, that's my question.
Yeah. So, now, even in the case of MKUltra program killers and the like, they definitely have feelings. They might be programmed to have no feelings of remorse or pity, but that doesn't mean that they're not also programmed to be triggered into violent acts that are fueled by rage, like suppressed rage. Mm. Like that kind of natural, well, not natural, but kind of natural mechanism in human beings whereby if they, are abused or humiliated or whatever and they can't express, they're powerless to express the rage, then it gets compartmentalized away somewhere and then it gets triggered in a situation which they do feel that they can act on it and then it comes out. That's a natural thing in human beings that can actually be manipulated through, deliberate forms of torture, mind control, and so on and so forth. Mm. But that those people do have feelings. It's just that they can also shut off their feelings in some way, or their feelings can be shut off.
Yeah.
And that, but that's also a spectrum. Like we all shut down sometimes.
Yeah. So. Are they not just on one end of the spectrum?
I would certainly say so. I mean, I do use the word psychopath and sociopath, but I think whenever I use it, I think, oh, I shouldn't use that word because it just reinforces a false understanding of reality, which is that, yeah, there are people who are psychopaths and then there's everybody else.
Yeah.
So... And one of the reasons I love Taxi Drive, you didn't see Blue Velvet yet, did you? You saw it before, Taxi Drive. Okay, so what about Frank Booth? Would you consider him to be a psychopath? Well, you can just answer it, because I was going to qualify it, but how would you describe Frank Booth?
Well, I don't think... Well, they don't make it out like he has never had any feelings. Like, he's just...
He's very passionate.
Yeah.
I mean, they show how passionate he is.
Yeah, and... I mean, he seems much deeper rooted than just his... But then it depends what the definition of a psychopath is.
I know, well, I realise that we'll just get back into that. But, I mean, Frank Booth is clearly a dangerous person. He's somebody you would not want in your neighbourhood.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to know him. He's actually monstrous.
Mm.
He's a monstrous character. I find him very sympathetic, that's why I brought him up. Not as sympathetic as Travis. So what... I don't know if it was worth saying what would you call a cat or somebody like that, but, I mean, what use is a word like psychopath if it doesn't apply to somebody like Frank Booth, I guess is my point. Like, if he's not a psychopath.
Yeah. Well, I didn't think, because my definition of psychopath up until yesterday had been someone who was almost not even fucked up, but was didn't have a part of their brain or whatever, just wasn't able to have feelings. So therefore wouldn't be someone that necessarily had a deeper issue, in inverted commas.
Mm-hmm.
like Frank. Or, well, we don't know necessarily about Travis, but because Frank is definitely much more like something has happened and he is fucked up.
Same with Travis. I mean, there's implications about war, Vietnam vet and stuff. Yes, but also we see his patterns. He's trying to connect to a woman who's hopelessly inept.
But you could be trying to connect to someone all your life.
Yeah.
Rather than... And just always had difficulty.
Yeah.
Which could be Travis. Rather than necessarily something's happened.
Oh, I see. Well, but there'd be some reason why the person was unable to connect to people.
Yeah.
I mean, something happened. I mean, something's happened to everyone, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be one really clear-cut event.
Mm.
But somehow that person's psyche has been formed in such a way that they don't function socially. And,
yeah.
Or rather, they function... Their social function is observably impaired, I'd say, as opposed to the rest, most of us where it's not that obvious.
Yeah.
So, I forgot where we were going with that. Okay, so your idea of psychopath, let's stay with that, because that's kind of interesting, and we talked about it last night, but... Where did you get this idea besides House? I mean, was it just an episode of House? Or?
Well, that. I think that was when I said, is that literally what a psychopath is then? Someone that actually can't feel.
Did you ask it out loud?
To Mum, who sat there, and she said, I don't know, I guess so, and then I looked it up, I think.
On Wikipedia?
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Not. Necessarily credible.
Right.
And then since then, that has been my idea of what a psychopath is.
How long ago was that?
And that was about 3 years ago. It has always confused me because I couldn't understand how someone that didn't have feelings would do what we call psychopathic things, because where would the drive be?
Yeah. And what about a question of how or why somebody would just not be able to have feelings?
Well, I understood that to be them just not having that part of the brain,
So that's very mechanistic.
Like we can lose the part of the brain that controls sleep.
Yeah.
We can lose the part of the brain, and we can lose different parts of the brain and then not be able to do certain things.
Right, socially, physically impaired. But it's an unusually mechanistic viewpoint for you, though, it seems. I haven't observed that you have a mechanistic view of reality until this particular
thing. Well, I don't necessarily, but this is... Well, that's why I just understood this to be that, like a psychopath to be... Like I understand someone with fatal insomnia to be someone that's lost the part of their brain that controls sleep.
Yeah.
Someone who's a psychopath to not have a part of the brain that controls feelings.
Well, I understand, yeah, but still. I mean,
you say I don't have a mechanistic viewpoint of things in general doesn't mean I don't understand what I would have thought to be something that was mechanistic.
I know, but a psychopath is obviously a very profound example of psychology, a kind of psychology.
Therefore, yeah, which is why I was surprised when they said that in House.
Yeah.
But didn't, I mean, I was surprised, but thought, oh, that's quite interesting then. I thought that was more interesting than...
Than that they were traumatised or what have you.
I took that to be like a really, really sort of weird way the world works. And I thought that was more interesting. That someone would actually just not have a part of their brain to feel, rather than like everything else where... Something happened, therefore.
Well, maybe that's how they, you know, appeal to people, is by, because it's interesting. So anyway, here's the first definition that comes up. It says, a person suffering from chronic mental disorder with abnormal or violent social behaviour. And then it has a bunch of... And then informal, unstable and aggressive person. So there's nothing about feelings in that at all.
You look up people who don't have emotions.
Well, let's stick with psychopath for now. Let's go to Wiki. You know, Wiki is obviously not the most reliable source, but it does have a certain... It certainly is a good source for gauging what the consensus is about something. Psychopathy, sometimes considered synonymous with sociopathy, is traditionally defined as a personality disorder characterized by persistent antisocial behavior, impaired empathy and remorse, and bold, disinhibited, egotistical traits. Different conceptions of psychopathy and blah, blah, blah. So that does refer to two specific emotion type things, similar to emotions, but not feelings in general. And what about Kevin? Like, how did you think of Kevin as a psychopath?
When I watched the film or when I read the book?
Well, either one. Or, I mean, did it come up when you were thinking about, oh, that's what a psychopath is?
Well, no, because if I think of a psychopath as someone that...
doesn't have feelings.
Would, yeah.
Because he hates people, doesn't he, Kevin?
Yeah, and also because... But even if I thought about it that, but my definition of a psychopath was someone that... who didn't have the capacity to feel, you know, in that way, then no, because Kevin is born having been unwanted for the whole 9 months of her pregnancy, and that's where we're led to believe that the root of the issue is.
So, in the book, yeah.
Yeah,
in the film, he would fit your idea of a psychopath a little bit, at least.
Mm.
He doesn't seem to have normal feelings, anyway. So yeah, nothing's coming up, and I'm sure if we search hard we'll find something, but the fact that we'd have to search hard is probably enough to, you know, consider that this idea that you've come up with about psychopaths is, well, it must be, and it can't be a freak accident that you've come up with this idea, that you've adopted it.
Mm.
Therefore, it must be one that gets around.
Well, yeah, until our conversation for 3 years, I've talked about psychopaths and not come up against anything. We were talking about it a while ago, about someone we knew,
mm-hmm.
a group of us, and I said I thought he might be a psychopath because I've never felt anything from him. I've never had any... felt like there were any emotions,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, we just discussed it. Like, it didn't question that definition of a psychopath. Someone that just doesn't have feelings, that isn't necessarily positive or negative, just neutral.
Yeah, well, that was your particular take, that this idea there might be a neutral kind of psychopath, and there is a lot of literature out there that's sort of putting a positive spin on psychopaths in terms of them being more driven and so on, and more successful and more sort of self-oriented or self-determining in a kind of individualism. There is a growing...
I mean, the person that I'm thinking about would be more impaired sort of ambitiously also, because he just follows this idea of morality and this idea of doing things right without even feeling it, because he's got this whole sort of belief system built up around doing the right thing and being moral and
mm-hmm.
and, you know, having the right girlfriend and not cheating on her and saying the right thing and being nice and being friendly and being liked. So, but you feel around him that there is nothing. There's no truth in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even if he isn't my definition of a psychopath, he could be the common definition of a psychopath, as in there could be rage that we haven't felt.
What about hostility, antisocial behaviour?
Well, no, not... No, I haven't felt it, but then aren't psychopaths supposed to be good actors? Isn't that the point, that we don't feel that?
Yes, but it has to come out somewhere, otherwise there wouldn't be psychopaths.
Does it have to come out yet, though, because he's only 19?
That's awesome. like a budding psychopath. About Ted Bundy.
Which one was Ted Bundy?
I mean, his serial killer, whose MO was raping and killing young, attractive young women.
Right.
And his method was he would wear a cast often, so he would seem helpless and he would ask women for help getting shopping into his car or his van, and then he would, I think he might have chloroformed them.
Sebastian was very interested in him. He told me once he'd read 12 Ted Bundy biographies because I said, oh, you know, Bundy was linked to intelligence and he had help escaping prison and stuff. And Sebastian completely scorned it, and that was how he scorned it, that he'd read 12 Bundy biographies. So obviously he was very into
This is in,
Bundy.
you wrote this in here, didn't you? In Seen and Not Seen.
Oh, yeah,
Yeah.
that's
Because then
right.
you say, I doubt there even are 12 Ted
I
Bundy
do doubt
biographies,
that
yeah.
there are. We could find out. I imagine there might be six or something. Because he was very famous as a serial killer, and he probably most closely fits his profile as a guy who seemed to have no remorse, was able to be charming, seemed quite intelligent. But of course was extremely violent, and apparently, I would say obviously, had a massive amount of rage against women. I mean, if you're bashing women's heads in with a hammer or whatever, that's got to be rage. Unless you've got some sort of mission and you have to kill people and you're doing it just very clinically and efficiently and so on in order to accomplish some aim. But his only aim was killing women. So, I'm not sure I'm going with that. Well, I mean, it's always been a source of interest to me is, what a psychopath is made of. And I first saw Taxi Driver, I guess I was about 15 maybe. One of the movies I saw when I went to London on my own, would have stayed with Sebastian, found out what old movies were playing that I wanted to see. Of course, I first heard about it from Sebastian. And I think it probably did. I mean, obviously it had a big impact, but I think it probably answered some intuition in me that that psychopaths or people who behaved psychopathically were deserved compassion, not just fear and condemnation. But the other thing that's interesting about Taxi Driver, I don't know if this will lead us anywhere, but is that it shows how, because I was into Clint Eastwood and Dirty Harry, and it's kind of a more realistic depiction of that kind of character. Character who's lonely, alone, a warrior who dispatches villains with extreme prejudice, and no feeling. That's the Clint Eastwood character, but that's portrayed as a heroic, a role model, somebody you would admire. I admired, whereas Travis is somebody to pity, really. So that was, I think that was, I think I write about that in there as well. It was a necessary counterbalance to this idea that violent men are heroic. But you don't have a particular interest in violent heroes.
No.
You have an interest in alienated, lonely, estranged, socially dysfunctional male characters. So Travis fit that. He fit that bill. Which is unexpected.
Why is that
Well, I
so?
mean, the films that you like. And you have your list of favourite films, and most of them do have these sorts of characters, often dark-haired, even Donnie Darko, Harold and Maude, The Graduate. Can't remember the other ones offhand. Submarine.
These are my old, well, favorite films when I was 15, 16. The only ones still there would be Harold and Donnie.
Right.
But why is it weird that Travis did that?
So that Travis is the only one of these characters that kills people, I think.
Yeah, to be fair, on that list when I was 15, Kevin was also on there.
All right. But, okay. So you liked Kevin, the character?
Yeah, definitely.
You were sympathetic towards him?
Yeah.
That's surprising.
Wow.
It's like liking Damien in The Omen.
Yeah, I just, but I find it, I don't know, I think I find it hard not to be sympathetic. I mean, it's weird because I can be incredibly unempathetic, I can completely shut down, but then, like, a lot of the time I think in those, with those kinds, with characters or with films, I find it impossible not to be sympathetic. I don't know why.
Well, I can see their suffering. I mean, that was what impacted me about Taxi Driver, was it really depicts the depth of his loneliness and his suffering. Particularly that scene where he kicks over the TV and he's holding his head in his hands, that just really got to me when I first saw it. So yeah, it's very difficult not to empathize with depiction of a realistic depiction of suffering. But I wouldn't have said that Kevin had that.
Norman Bates.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite. But it's the performance as well more than anything else, I think, in films.
Yeah.
So Ezra Miller's performance in Kevin was so incredible, I couldn't not love Kevin. And Anthony Perkins' performance in Psycho is so amazing that I can't not love Norman Bates.
Okay, so that may be somewhat the case with Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet, then, for me.
And obviously, yeah. What? I mean, Taxi Driver.
Yeah, of course. But there must be something in you that relates to these characters.
Yeah.
That identifies with them, even though they're male.
At least that would be where be a line between alienated, which is relatable, and then killing people, like just psychopaths, which is the definition of unrelatable, really.
Well, that depends.
Well, if it's by my definition of psychopath, then it would be sort of the definition of unrelatable. If you have feelings, then you can't relate, because they don't have feelings.
Okay, but the characters that we're talking about do have feelings.
Not the way Kevin was portrayed in the film.
I would agree, actually, about Kevin, but Travis certainly does.
And
Frank Booth.
Thinking about Norman Bates.
Norman Bates, yeah, we see him
yeah.
feeling, suffering.
Yeah. So, yeah, but yeah, Kevin wouldn't be in the film unless I picked up on the concept of Kevin from the book.
Yeah.
Which is possible, I guess.
Yeah, but you're saying that you relate to the alienation and the estrangement and the loneliness.
Yeah.
But not to the violence. Okay, some of these characters are not violent. So, but before getting to that, I mean, they're all male characters.
Mm.
So that's possibly unusual in itself, isn't it?
That yeah.
You chose to identify with this series of male characters.
Yeah, I mean, my favourite characters are rarely ever female.
Yeah.
Even Maud probably doesn't come up on my list of favourite characters.
Right.
Which would be Harold. Maybe Matilda and Leon, but then I probably would pick Leon anyway.
So there's a psychopath.
Leon?
Well, not in the context of the film, because it's a glorification of. But somebody doesn't have feelings about killing people.
But he does, though. I mean, Leon does. I mean, he's not based on a true story, so.
No, I know. So, but the character doesn't have remorse about killing all those people.
Strangers, but he...
Yeah, they're strangers, exactly.
Well, yeah, so. But you can imagine someone could either convince themselves or could just about... I mean, you'd have to be very, very thick-skinned, and few people could do it, but you wouldn't necessarily have to have no remorse to be a hitman.
Why not?
Well, I mean, for one thing, he clarifies who he will and won't kill, which is no women, no kids.
Right. So he
clearly has, like, this strong idea of morals.
Well, that could be, like, your friend, you're saying.
Yeah, but...
Because that's very rigid anyways, for, I mean, kids, okay, maybe I can see that.
Yeah, too. I mean, I obviously can't imagine ever being a hitman, but you can imagine that someone who's commissioned to kill all these nasty, horrible, money-obsessed people, I mean, I couldn't imagine doing it, but I could imagine, you know, being fine with talking with being friends with someone who did.
Oh, you can?
Yeah. I mean, easily Leon.
Yes, but Leon's fictional.
Yeah, but I can imagine someone being okay with killing the kind of people that hitmen are commissioned to kill.
But aren't they... I mean, it's a movie... Convention.
Yeah, but the kind of people that hitmen are commissioned to kill are usually, I mean, not always, but are usually, you know, the kind of people that commission hitmen, which are...
Well, they're in a world, they're in the criminal world, yeah. Whether it's big business or politics or whatever, they're in the criminal world because they're high status enough to get whacked.
Mm-hmm.
But what I mean is there's a movie convention to, A, show the characters that the hitman is killing as... so depraved and unpleasant that you don't lose sympathy for the hitman, and B to I forgot what B was now actually, but to depict the hitman as having feelings outside of his work.
Mm.
So as in, it's like he can turn his feelings on and off. The reality, I think, would be very different, that a person who's able to kill anyone, doesn't matter how unpleasant they are, without any remorse, be efficient, you know, move in quickly, kill, you know, kill any witnesses, move out, not hesitate, that kind of person can't have a conscience.
But why is it they can't have a conscience rather than they repress that when they...
Oh, well... I mean, that's why I say conscience, and I think this is closer to your definition of a psychopath than somebody who doesn't have a feeling and somebody who doesn't have a conscience. Okay, but the conscience is it's a bit of a vague word, but I'd say that's closer to a definition of a psychopath.
But you... can imagine that somebody could, I mean, maybe, can imagine that somebody could decide that they were going to, somebody who, I mean, like Leon, struggles to admit that he has feelings.
Yeah.
Who is, you know, like, stands behind the door thinking he's not going to open it to Matilda because... he knows the trouble that it will cause, but then is unable to not open it.
Yeah.
Could convince himself that he doesn't have... like, he does convince himself pretty much that he doesn't have feelings, that he can go and be a hitman and kill anybody. So why is it not that he can convince himself that he doesn't have these feelings of remorse or anything?
Well, how does a person convince themselves that they don't have feelings? Like, how would that work?
It's just suppressing it.
Yeah, but suppression, I mean, as I understand it, and suppression isn't something that is done consciously.
Like no, a person but can't it's not suggesting to Leon that it's done consciously. I mean, it goes into...
No, but you are. You're suggesting it, that he's...
No, not necessarily, just that, I mean, in that film, it goes into what happened, which is incredibly traumatic for him. He then came to Seattle, San Francisco.
So you know what would interest you in this context was this guy Chris Kronk that I met in the Okanagan in British Columbia. I probably never talked about him. He had been very young when I did the podcast, but I was shooting the Ghost podcast about Sam Peckinpah, and which is another case of my interest in psychopaths, because Sam Peckinpah, the film director, was, I say, you could say he was not a borderline psychopath, but he definitely had psychotic tendencies. He was violent and paranoid and very manipulative, and he was an alcoholic, so it was, anyway. But the opposite of somebody who didn't have feelings. But anyway, that's a complete digression. I was doing this podcast, and then I ran into this guy, Chris Kronk, while I was picking fruit. And Chris Kronk had been a collector with the Hells Angels, but for, I guess, small-time mob collector. He was a Hells Angel and he was a collector. And so one of the things he would do was, and he was a big, burly, beefy guy, coarse and quite crude, but very, he was very friendly towards me, kind of affable, quite intelligent, and he was drawn to me, and we were drawn to each other, but I mean, he appreciated my intelligent, poetic side, and and he hadn't been working as a collector for quite some time, hence he was picking cherries to make his way. But anyway, we got talking as we were camped in the same place, and then ended up recording our conversations, and they became podcasts. And he told me about his time working for the mob as a collector, and one of the things he would do was he would take garden shears, and if the person didn't pay, he would cut their fingers off one by one. So he would tell me these stories about how he did it. And wasn't any remorse really, but there was. What it wasn't, he wasn't laughing about it either. I mean, there was some. I guess there was some remorse, but it wasn't overtly expressed. He certainly didn't seem proud of it. But I think he did have the attitude that, you know, they. In fact, I kind of remember him saying that they knew what they were doing when they borrowed the money, and so they just got what. Not necessarily what they deserve, but well, I mean, it was just part of the natural order of things, and he was just administering their own karma, I'm going to use that term. And he also killed somebody because he talked about bodies in the barrel. So here was somebody who, I guess you could say, was kind of a psychopath in their day. I mean, to be able to do that, to be able to cut somebody's fingers off while they're begging for mercy. That's pretty extreme, but I liked him a lot, and I didn't hold it against him at all. So I guess that supports your point, which I was going to argue against, and maybe not your point, but kind of where you were coming from, that somebody could do terrible things that required a lack of conscience, but at the same time have qualities and attributes that were able to come out under different circumstances or later.
And did you feel like you did connect with him?
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my sort of biggest definition or highest definition of feeling, is connecting with someone else. Being able to connect with someone else.
Yeah. So. But you were going towards that. If you knew somebody who killed people for a living, you don't see why that would mean you couldn't connect with them. And where I was going was that I doubt that you'd be able to connect with somebody like that because they would be psychopaths.
Yeah, I doubt I would have many hitman friends. But I'm saying, and obviously Leon is a Hollywoodized version, but I'm saying if there was a Leon,
yeah,
I wouldn't necessarily be like, that's magic. I would think that was possible.
If there was somebody like Leon?
Yeah.
As in what? As in somebody who was quite likeable but happened to be a hitman.
Yeah. I mean, someone that you could connect with, but that...
Yeah. Well, as I say, I've just disproved
yeah.
the position I was going to take with Chris Kronk. The main qualifiers, he was out. Mm. And he was the reason he was drawn to me, a part of the reason was he was trying to... not make amends, but face up to his past.
Mm.
He was trying to yeah, move so, past yeah. and move out of...
But you said he didn't really feel remorseful about it.
Well, I can't say what he felt. As he didn't really express remorse. As in, he certainly didn't weep or say, oh, I did the terrible things. Mm. It was nothing remotely like that. But... I mean, you know me, I would have been expressing, I wouldn't have held back, seeing as I felt comfortable with him, my, I don't know about horror exactly, but like, how could you do stuff like that, and what did that feel like, and how do you feel about it now? I'm sure I was, you know, I wasn't giving him a free ride there, and I wasn't just thinking, wow, that's cool, man, you know, at all. It was disturbing, obviously. And that was the question, like, how could you do something like that? How could you, be that brutal? How could you brutalize human beings? And so maybe he did express remorse and I'm just not remembering. Because I think overall he did have a sort of mood of remorse about him. Like he talked a lot about his ex-wife and his kids and, you know, how strange he was from them, and he was definitely a lost. He was pretty lost, like just kind of wandering around, picking fruit, and didn't feel like he had any much by way of human connections.
Mm.
Hence, he connected to me. Like, I'm sure it was quite therapeutic for him to talk to somebody who was sensitive and compassionate and stuff, and he didn't judge him. I mean, actually, there aren't many people like that.
Yeah.
So, and part, a big part of the reason that I was able to was because it wasn't just theoretical for me, it wasn't just that I liked characters in movies who did bad things, it was that I myself had done things that made me realize that, you know, people aren't one thing, like a person can have lots of good qualities and even sensitivity and compassion and still end up in a place where they act brutally towards others.
Mm.
So, now I'm thinking of Clockwork Orange again. So that was the sort of the departure point for this conversation yesterday. And so the character in Clockwork Orange is, and for the record, and you know, but if this is a podcast, some people won't know, I dislike that film intensely. I think it's borderline immoral, and I say borderline in the sense because I don't really like to use morality as a gauge for something, but at best irresponsible, at worst kind of a destructive film in some way. But anyway, the main character played by Malcolm McDowell is very charismatic, makes the character very charismatic. And Alex in that, he's not a psychopath who has no feelings. he's a psychopath who enjoys hurting others.
Mm.
He's obviously a sadist.
Mm.
Which I guess is a point to get to, really, because, like we were saying, well, a psychopath is just a spectrum, and so on and so forth. Then why have the word? Well, how about sadists? Like,
mm.
A sadist is very different from your idea of a psychopath, because they are acting on their feelings.
Mm.
They're doing what they enjoy, and what they enjoy is hurting other people.
Mm.
And I didn't get that feeling with Chris Kronk. I think if I had, then I would have made some distance.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So that's a big distinction between hurting people out of rage
mm-hmm.
and hurting people because you enjoy it.
It seems like, yeah.
So then out of the ones that we've talked about.
Yeah.
Travis is rage.
Yeah.
As is Frank.
Yes, but Frank enjoys it.
Yeah, but not... It doesn't seem to be the only... I mean, Travis enjoys his plotting, enjoys... Yeah, like he...
Yeah, presumably, yeah. I mean, that ending's very orgasmic.
So, but this is the difference between... I don't know, the calmness of... It's different, sort of like... Opposite, I mean, between the rage and like still getting something out of it, but it's very much driven by rage, and then the calmness of
mm-hmm.
doing something because you enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean...
Well, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Kevin.
Closer to that, yeah.
And then... But I mean, Kevin has so much rage, though.
Yeah. Well, but don't you think there always has to be rage underneath that?
Yeah. So then is it not just, again, on the same spectrum?
I think it's just the same spectrum. Just the rage is
suppressed even further.
Yes. Yeah. So
to the extent that, you know, Kevin... is much more, is so aware of it. I mean, he's so capable, because he's so sort of not out of touch, but he's so far from feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in all of them, it's rage.
Yeah. So let's bring in a third element then, which is powerlessness and power.
Mm.
Because I think that the erotic pleasure that a sadistic psychopath, we're going to call them that, gets from hurting people comes from... a feeling of power, having power over somebody.
Yeah.
And that that need or that drive is sourced in experiences of powerlessness, probably presumably as a child, in which they would have been consumed by rage because they were being hurt or oppressed or whatever. And powerless to do anything about it. But that would mean they're also, even though they had rage, and that, you know, rage is supposed to empower an animal.
Mm.
Like, if an animal feels rage, it's so it will attack.
Mm.
So if a human being, and this could happen with animals too, but we don't really know, you know. Anyway, but with a human being, it's also an animal. If as a child, it feels rage, but it's powerless to act on the rage. Like, the fear is greater than the rage. You can have two emotions at the same time. Then the rage gets turned inward, suppressed, shut off, and so on and so forth. And then There'll be a part of that person that was seeking an outlet for the rage that would entail an experience of having power over somebody weaker. And the pleasure would have to do with actually being able to own or release the rage, even if it didn't come out as actual rage. Like when I was watching that those violent images against women, which you know about from Seen and Not Seen, I was not aware of any anger.
Mm.
It was a purely bodily thing, like I felt. Mm. But I could say I was aware of a feeling of power, even though I didn't think about it. But because that was the nature of the imagery that I was watching, was one was a man overpowering a woman generally.
Mm. So where would everyone we've been talking about fall into that power?
No retreat in comfort, west of pacified. No retreat in comfort.
I'm going to end the first part of our conversation there. You can listen to the second part next week. I'm running a bit late because of all the travel difficulties and being on the road and the air and all that, more or less keeping scheduled. Part two of my conversation with Emerald will be up, I hope, next Thursday, which is the 31st of August 2017. I'd like to thank the donators who I maybe haven't named lately. Kevin, Stephen, Mark, Kelvin, Andy, Cara. Thanks for supporting this podcast, keeping the wheels in motion.
No thought for the suffering, but I still believe. Power, greed, lying, the time now screaming. But I still believe. No retreat in comfort, west of pacified. No retreat in comfort, no, 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 no. Spare me and shame you, this leaden union of jack lights and camboot through a hail of flags. Be careful, though your friends are no correlation. Levels within games, rich leaders, poor nations. What does this freedom mean? No retreat in comfort, west of pacified. No retreat in comfort, no, no. No retreat in comfort, bullets in the broadside. No retreat in comfort, no, no. This is the gloaming of the world, far from far away, far from a magic land, far from fairgrounds, far from far away. No show, no rides, no retreat in comfort. No retreat in comfort, no retreat in comfort. I've got an ensuite quarantine, I hear the distant music of pneumonia. They're getting ready for you, your full fear of certainty, fast emotion to go. No retreat in comfort, west of pacified. No retreat in comfort, no, no. No retreat in comfort, bullets in the broadside. No retreat in comfort, no, no, no. No retreat in comfort, promise dark telephones. no retreat in comfort, seeing nothing in the zones. No, no feeling, no feeling, I'm feeling, no feeling, feeling, no feeling, I'm feeling, no feeling. Say I'm inside the mind of a satellite. No retreat in comfort, west of pacified. No retreat in comfort, no, no, no retreat in comfort, bullets in the broadside. No retreat in comfort, no, no. Our mania for consumption, our minds of attrition, concrete plunders and spoil high rise wilderness. These pariahs of prefabrication, random dystopias of regeneration. No, no, no. Yeah, I'm in the neon desert. This is the sixth time around. Hear the alarms and sirens, the building, these breaking buildings, the future. This is the future. What future? What future? What future? What future? No retreat in comfort, west of pacified. No retreat in comfort, no, no, no retreat in comfort, bullets in the broadside. No retreat in comfort, no, no, no retreat in comfort, promise stock telephones. No retreat in comfort, seeing nothing in the zones.